Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
Now, we want to return to the Grace Report, which looked into the care of an intellectually disabled woman in the southeast of the country and was published earlier this week. And we're joined now by one of the whistleblowers who made the first protected disclosure about Grace back in 2009, which was central to Grace's story emerging in the first place. We're going to call my next guest Paula, which is not her real name. Paula, you're very welcome to the programme. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
Will you give me your reaction to the report, the initial reaction you had when it was published earlier in the week?
Well, certainly. I suppose I was caught off guard, I think, much like everybody else. I had no notice of publication. Nobody had contacted me from the department or otherwise to let me know that it was coming. And I suppose I'm just really shocked to learn that the families were left in the same position. I've only learned that from the media. I'm away at the moment on holidays, so I'm just picking up what I can from the media coverage on this. I suppose in relation to the report itself, I had long expected a very, very weak report with findings that would be diluted by endless legal argument, legal challenges and so forth. I could see that the process I had participated in for years with the Farrelly Commission was only ever going to produce a report like that. So I had actually had no intention really this week of opening the report, but I was really struck by the level of incredulity, I suppose, across the board with which the findings have been received. From what I was hearing from your own coverage there in RTE and in the media generally, I just couldn't understand how the facts of what occurred here could be so sanitised in the findings in the report. So I have now read some of it, and look, it's very disappointing. I think, to you know, at a minimum, that's what I would say. It's very disappointing. The wording is certainly very legalistic and inaccessible. The findings are really, really hard to follow. I mean, I'm in the thick of this. I know most of the evidence inside out, the documents that were there, and even I find the way that it goes back and forth and scatters findings throughout it, it really is so hard to follow. Mm-hmm. If you haven't been involved. And I just think it's such a shame, because that actually really suits the people who failed Grace. It suits the HSE. It suits those about whom findings have been made, because they're just so hard to find. And I'm just devastated for the families, I suppose, that all this time, all this money has been wasted on this type of a process to produce a document like that. One which I have no doubt that the HSE would be delighted if we all just decided that it was too long and too difficult to read, basically.
Now, you mentioned your involvement in the inquiry. You gave evidence to it. What was that experience like?
Yeah, I suppose it was the most horrendous experience. And I think just because of how long it went on for in particular. And I know there's been a lot of talk about the unsuitability of the process or the type of inquiry that was held. And I do agree with all of those criticisms, but I do think it's important maybe for people to understand, for your listeners, if we could explain how the process actually unfolds and how it leads to a report like this. The Commission split up its work into a number of different modules to look at various aspects of the terms of reference. That meant that witnesses like me were called to appear before the Commission on multiple occasions throughout the 8 years. So just over and over again, for days on end, you would be called to give evidence. No witness statements were sought in this inquiry, which I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I found it unusual, because I have seen in other inquiries where witness statements have been sought. That had the effect that nobody knew what each witness was going to say before they would say it. So you were relying on having to attend not only for your own evidence, but you would also then have to attend other witnesses' evidence to hear what they might say about you, so that you could then cross-examine them and rebut and refute their evidence. Witnesses like me weren't in a position to do that. You know, we have jobs, we have to work financially. I just ran out of resources to participate in an inquiry that was set up in that way. But it did mean that institutional parties that were represented, or other parties who were represented before the Commission by senior counsel, junior counsel, solicitors, and so forth. After each witness, like me, would give evidence, each of those legal teams would be afforded the opportunity to cross-examine. So I've been cross-examined over and over and over again for days on end in a highly adversarial manner before the commission. Now, I'm not saying it was unlawful or that anything happened that was not in accordance with the rules of the commission, because I did hear on Morning Ireland during the week that that's how Bernard Gloucester is trying to defend the HSE's approach to the commission and to the cross-examination and so forth. That's the standard he seems to be holding the HSE to. And I certainly do acknowledge that each party, we're all entitled to representation and to defend ourselves against adverse findings. That's a constitutional right. But institutional parties funded by the taxpayer, including the HSE, chose, in my view, to go into that inquiry and to defend the indefensible.
Can I talk to you about the indefensible, about, you know, perhaps losing sight in all of this this week when we talk about the report as much as we have of grace? And as I said at the beginning, you were the person who made the protected disclosure, the first one back in 2009 about grace. And subsequent to that, the decision was made to leave her in the home where she was. I mean, that really is what we need to focus on here, what Grace went through and why she was left there.
That's it. And I think that we already knew going into the commission a certain amount about that. We already had reports from Conal Devine, Conal Dignam, the resilience report. But of course, she was left there until 2009. So there were a lot of decisions, a lot of wrong decisions made along the way. And I think, as you say, that is what we need to focus on, because the narrative that there are no findings in this report, I think, is flawed. I think that the HSE and the people named in the report who failed Grace must be absolutely delighted this week by the narrative and the spin that's been peddled in relation to that. And I must say, Claire, I say people very deliberately here, because again, it suits them for us to talk about systemic failures, but the system did not fail Grace here. People working in our health services failed Grace. And despite what is being said about, I think, like, that the report is a whitewash, or that there are no findings in it, or an absence of findings, certainly from what I have been able to read, and it's very difficult, as I say, it's a very lengthy report and it does jump back and forth, and I'm only giving a preliminary view because I will say I have not read the report in full, but there are certainly serious, serious findings there, as you say, in relation to failures to remove her, but also even in relation to wardship. I read a section, or multiple sections, yesterday in relation to the findings, the various findings that Marjorie Farrelly made in relation to the HSE's failure to apply to the court to have Grace made a ward of court. Now, your listeners may recall that wardship is the process which allowed Grace to then have a solicitor appointed by the court in order to take a civil case against the HSE, through which she was awarded €6.3 million. But the HSE, their failure to make her a ward of court, the rationale for that, their motivations in that, there are very, very serious findings in this report in relation to that. And it seems to be that people are kind of glossing over that, or not focusing on that.
Well, we know that the report found no evidence of physical or sexual abuse. But even without that, and I know there are people who've taken issue with that finding, but even without that, what we know about what Grace went through in terms of her money not being used for the purpose it was designed for, her dental health, hygiene standards, and so on. Can you tell us a little bit about what you know about Grace in that context?
Absolutely. I think the focus is on, you know, in the wrong place here again around these findings, because what we do know from this is that Grace experienced neglect neglect is not a minor finding. To me, that's a serious finding that, again, people seem to be focusing on the finding that they couldn't conclude that there was sexual abuse or physical abuse. And remember, you know, this report is reporting maybe 30 years after some of the concerns that they were looking at. So I wasn't surprised that the commission chose to make those findings, again, because of their legalistic approach. But the findings of neglect, the findings in relation to Grace's finances are very serious. But what we also need to look at is the fact that the report considers what the HSE knew about those concerns. They knew about the concerns of neglect. They knew about the issues in relation to her teeth, and the fact that she wasn't being cared for appropriately in that placement. And what I would like people to focus on is the fact that repeatedly, over a number of years, people in the HSE chose to leave Grace there. And that's the piece. This isn't somebody who, through lack of oversight, I've heard that a lot this week, through lack of oversight, was just left there because she fell through the cracks. She didn't. There were meetings, there were reports, there were discussions, there was legal advice sought. And yet they all decided, for reasons that are set out in the report, I might add, and are very, very serious findings, they decided, let's leave her there. And they did nothing to protect her, in my view. And I think that that's, you know, we need to change the narrative on this, because I think the current narrative that is being put out there suits the HSE, and it suits the people who failed Grace.
Other people who came forward as whistleblowers and have spoken about this week have said that this will deter others from doing the same now. Do you agree, Paula?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I would never do it again. I regret that I ever did this, because what was it all for? I genuinely think that the system is designed to essentially teach you a lesson, you know, to make sure that people look at what's happened to us in this process and to say, you know, make sure you don't speak up, make sure you don't make disclosures or look for inquiries. And I think that, you know, I've left social work. I'm no longer working in that profession. And in the responses to this report this week, I am in no way comforted or in no way confident that that is going to change. If they don't acknowledge their wrongdoing in that way, and I haven't seen anywhere that they've acknowledged their wrongdoing in that regard, well, then why would anybody speak up? Why would anybody do this? And I certainly wouldn't, I wouldn't advise anybody or advocate that they do, because in the end, it's utterly pointless, to be honest.
But do you feel, Paula, that you've achieved something for Grace ultimately?
I don't know that I did. I do think that, you know, I petitioned the High Court to have her made a ward of court, and, you know, the offices of minors and wards of court have certainly, you know, had the legal powers to be able to do what needs to be done to ensure that Grace now has a voice, she's protected, she, you know, has her settlement from the HSE, and, you know, has a very different life than what we know from this report, and that she had certainly up to 2009. But for me personally, no, I think it's all been an utter waste of time, because they just never come forward and say, you know, we're holding our hands up, we can see here's where we went wrong. They wait until somebody's made a finding and then say, well, we acknowledge the findings and now we apologise to Grace. That's not a system that's going to protect anybody.
Paula, we'll leave it there, and thank you very much for speaking to us. That's Paula, who was the first whistleblower in the Grace case back in 2009.